The Approaching the Natural Podcast with Sid Garza-Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. This is Sid Garza-Hillman and the Approaching the Natural Podcast. Welcome back. This is my weekly podcast where I discuss all things related to health and happiness, living better in the modern world, how to implement true, sustainable, lifelong change if you so choose to take that on. And for some of you listening to this, you may just be checking this out, but you're not ready to jump in on my approach and system. But that's fine, because that's part of the process. So I kind of hooked you in, even if you haven't started, because just by listening, you're opening yourself up to a completely new way to engage in your life. And that's the beginning of a lot of people's approach and way to get into this, is just to start listening and be open to it and then go, all right, I'll give it a shot. So good. And if you're just joining me, great. 102 episodes in, you know, little late to the party. Are you a little late to the party? Little late to the party. This is the beauty of podcasts. There's no set deal. You can go and back and listen to old episodes. Now, one thing to understand about iTunes, and I know that many people listen to this on iTunes. So iTunes only carries the most recent 50. So the way to do that is you go to my website, sidgarzahillman.com, and you can listen to every episode from starting from one. Now, if I were fancy pants, I would have an app that you could download and then you would get all my episodes. I'm not there yet. I got bigger fish to fry. Okay, more on that later. Okay, good. I got some mushroom coffee going today. That's what I got going today. Now, there's a couple reasons why that is. One of them is simply that I was not in the mood for single malt. Okay, not in the mood for single malt, which is kind of amazing if you think about it, because I actually got a couple bottles sent to me by a listener a few months ago, and then another listener sent me another bottle last week. I'm good on scotch, and that's amazing, but don't send me any more scotch, anybody, because I'm like set for the next 2 years. I got the freaking nicest stuff I would never buy myself in a million years unless it had like, you know, General Foods label on it. I don't even know if General Foods makes single malt, but if they do, I'm sure it's fantastic. Hostess single malt, also I would buy that. Just so you know where I'm laying down. Crunchberry single malt, I've got a bottle of that, so there's proof in that. Odd start to today's podcast. So here's the deal. So I'm going to make a few quick announcements as I do. And look, just bear with me, okay? Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Strava, Sid Garza-Hillman. Free chapter, if you go to my website, sidgarzahillman.com, throw your email address in there, you get a free chapter of my book called Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto. Through that website, you can get t-shirts, mugs, and bracelets that are part of my approach and part of my podcast. I feel okay about selling those. And on that note, that's one way you can support this podcast. Supporting the podcast is sort of a weird thing. Like, you don't have to support it. Look, it's what I do. It's part of my practice. I would rather just frame it like, don't do me any favors in terms of like, if you don't feel like it's worth it. But if you feel like this is worth it and you want to kick me some change, that's great. And yes, it does support me, but I don't want it to be a favor. I want it to be good for you, because do you think what you're getting out of this is worth it? So great. And there's a few ways for you to show that kind of support. I'll just go ahead and use it because I forgot my thesaurus, frankly. By buying a t-shirt and mug or bracelet, got a few more orders from listeners. Thank you. It really does help. It's for real. I'm not making millions, but it helps me out. Okay. You can buy my book for a buddy or for yourself, or you can go to my website and hit the donation button and throw me whatever money you have. It's like really a couple bucks. I'll take it. And that's helpful. It really, really is. Okay. Short of that, throw me an iTunes review or tell a friend. Those are all amazing ways for, I want to keep the word growing. It has grown exponentially since I began this almost ready 2 years ago. So what I decided to do this time was I milked the 100th episode just about as long as I could. I mean, I sort of milked the crap out of it. It was my 100th episode coming up. And then last week I was like, how was that 100th episode? I need a new benchmark. And here's my new benchmark. It will be my 2-year anniversary of this podcast. That's coming up as I kind of feigned a yawn there. That was not core. There's no causative. I wasn't yawning because it's getting up to 2 years. Although the thought of that I've done this for 2 years is mind blowing. I think my first episode was September 11th. Read into that, if you will. It just so happened. Okay. It just so happened to coincide with a tragedy. And, but I'm hoping this podcast has not been a tragedy. And what I'm going to do is spin this to say the podcast is about rebirth. It's about starting anew, starting fresh, redefining yourself, defining yourself for the first time, being who you are, and living on your principles, no matter what, understanding how strong and courageous you are. And that's a kind of a cool thing. So I can just float that out there like that too. So anyway, my two-year thing is coming up. I'm not going to do balloons like I did for the 100th. I know all of you guys listening, you all got balloons from your ceiling. Do you know the logistics of me setting that up? It was massive. The wiring alone was incredible, incredibly difficult. Now, again, if you didn't have balloons drop from your ceiling, that was just a technical glitch. Okay, it's not a perfect technology yet. Not as perfect as podcasting is. Okay, Stanford Inn is where I head up their wellness center in addition to my private practice, which you can find out on SidGarzaHillman.com. I do have a private practice. A little more on that later. I'm in a sort of a transition period where I'm kind of redefining how I work on a private basis, which may be of interest to any of you out there. Fine. I'm making it more accessible and a little more wide-ranging. But that's not to say that things are changing right now. So if you want to dive in with me on a private basis and really learn the system of what I do, then you can go to SidGarzaHillman.com. Otherwise, stay tuned because it's going to be kind of cool. All right. I'm such a pre-announcement on that. It's like ridiculous. So anyway, I'm just planting the seed. Good. I will be at the Portland Veg Fest November 14th and 15th. Staying in, I'm thinking, as a newly painted house. I've been promised that. If it's not newly painted, I'll stay in a hotel. I'm serious. That's where I keep my standards very high. If I stay at someone's house, I expect the rooms to be newly painted. Marshall, Texas, I will be there from April 1st to the 3rd doing a couple talks there. That's healthfest.com. Good. YouTube-wise, I know that I kind of hung on a little bit longer with my why I love trail running video. I really liked that video, and I kind of was like, I'm just going to keep that floated. And I did. And I'm going to keep doing videos now. I'm back in the swing of things. So what I did was, I don't know why I'm such on the running theme, but I did post a new video on the race day that I had. I mentioned last week that I had done, that I was doing a half marathon, which I did. And my wife and daughter ran the 5K, and my twins ran a half mile. And so I did a cute little video on it. It was very fun, and they had never done any races before. Nobody else, my wife or children, had never done a race. And so that was pretty fun. And I did my half marathon. Now, here's what happened with the half marathon. I mentioned last week that I hadn't really been training for it, and that's the truth. I just hadn't been training. It was a fun little small town benefit run. Like, I wasn't into it. Wasn't like a thing. Definitely not like my ultras. And frankly, given that I've done the ultras, talk about not being stressed about a half marathon. Now, again, is it all relative? Yes. It's like if you run 3 miles every day and I go, okay, well, you're going to do a quarter mile race or half mile race, you wouldn't really think much of it. And so a 13 mile used to seem super gargantuan to me before I had run one. And even after I'd run one, I was like, this is huge. I may not do ever a longer run than 13 miles. And that's the honest truth. But now it's a quarter of the run that I did almost. You know, it's a quarter of the 50 miles. So it's kind of cool how things settle in, how your perception of things change over time. What I'm getting at is the mushroom coffee is making me cough. I don't know how that's possible. What I'm getting at is all the things you think are gargantuan right now, there's a pretty good chance that half of those things or more would seem not that big of a deal to you if you could just engage in the process of incorporating those things over time long enough where it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Okay. 50 mile race. I've done one. It's gargantuan to me. It's not like, I've done that. Whoop-de-doo. Only 50. Sure. It's like, you know. So will I ever do a 50 miler again? I don't know. I may do a 50K next April. I may do a 50K. Mm. Now, if you watch the Garza Hillman race day video closely, there's one point where you hear me say, if you have to listen for it, but you hear me say, I haven't announced that yet. Go watch that video. Okay? That announcement will come. I'm pretty excited about that. And you're going to hear what I have to say about that, but not in this episode. Teaser. It's free. It's a freaking YouTube video. Good. Okay, good. My children liked the race. And by children, I mean only two of the three loved the race. That would be the twins. My daughter, Luna, 11 years old, who does some of my camera work on my videos, she could not have not liked it more. She disliked that whole process and probably will not do a race for a very long time. To each his own. My daughter did extremely well, like in fifth, not that I was counting. There was only a handful of kids, but she did great. And my son followed pretty close behind her. Pretty great too. He was like 40 seconds behind her. It's great. They don't care. They're not competitive. All I'm as a dad, I'm trying to say, okay, how can I optimize their performance? And what I realized, butter coffee. I would have, now in retrospect, I would have given my kids butter coffee. I think it would have helped the where they were at. And I really want that optimizing effect on my children. I want to push them as much as possible in everything they do in an effort to burn them out. That's my goal. Look, no news to you guys. I'm the small stepper. Now, back to my half marathon. So my half marathon was kind of a weird thing because I wasn't training for it per se. I've told you before, and I told you last week, that I've kept my mileage kind of at a decent level, nowhere near what I was when I was training for my ultras, but at a good level because I'm there and it does not that big of a deal for me. And it is what I'll get into in a minute, but I'm doing okay with it. I'm not stressed from it. I'm feeling okay. More on that in a minute. But I set a personal record. So here's how that went down. First of all, I've kept, like I said, my mileage up pretty good. I've done some interval training along the way, completely for fun, not with any goal in mind, just kind of like feeling good. I've done my integrated exercise. And I believe, like I said last week, that is helping my speed because when I'm not paying attention to my watch, my sort of relaxed pace is faster than it was a year ago. Not by much, but pretty significant in terms of, you know, that. I'd say a minute faster per mile, which, you know, it's not bad. So I go to this half marathon and I start out and I was feeling completely good in the beginning. Now, I came out kind of fast and I thought this could bite me in the ass. But I wasn't pushing it. I was really paying attention to my breath, really paying attention to just my whole body. And I was like, I'm just going to swing with it. And if you look on Strava, and you should follow me on Strava, and I'll follow you back. But you can see my pace stayed true the whole time. Like it did not waver up or down significantly. So turns out I didn't start out fast. I mean, I really gauged my body in that first mile. And I was totally let people pass me. Like it wasn't like there was nothing competitive about it. I wasn't pushing and I was like, this feels good. And I kind of looked down at my watch and it was about an 8:44, 45 pace. And I went, that's kind of cool. Let's just see. It's a fun run. I got nothing invested. Worst case is I go out a little too fast. I back off. Who cares? But I stayed true. Now in that video that I recap of it, you're also going to see that I got up first thing in the morning and jogged outside. So this guy, Neil, that I ran with last week, Neil the Canadian. I like to say where people are from. It's like Bernard the German and Neil the Canadian. Why? Because it gives you a geographical context because that's totally relevant to nothing. And so he said he's a good runner, better than I am by far. So let's just put it that way. I think he's only like 19 though. And so anyway, so he said he's not 19. He said, here's what you do. Get up first thing in the morning on race day. Get out the door as soon as you wake up. Don't drink water. Don't eat nothing. Just walk out the door and jog for 15 minutes. Now, does that sound insane to you? I said, on the race day? He goes, yeah. I go, all right. So it was taught to him by a more professional kind of runner. And so I thought, yeah, I got nothing to lose. 13 miles, not that big of a deal. I ran 16 3 weeks before at a 9-plus pace. I'm feeling good. I go 13, worst case scenario is a tank, and I walk across the finish. I don't care. I'm not invested in it like that. That's when it's a fun day for everybody, which it totally turned out to be. And so anyway, so I got up and ran outside. I didn't do the whole 15 minutes just for, you know, transparency, but it was over 10 minutes. And I'm jogging outside first thing in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, and just real light. And I got to tell you, I started that race. I had no jitters. I had no like stiffness. I was feeling really good. And so I feel like that's the deal. Now, the only hitch, the only drawback of the entire day was at mile 11, started to get a little cramping in my calf. And that pisses me off. I got to be honest. I don't know what to do about that. Because I, like I said, I ran 16 3 weeks before at a just slightly slower pace, but not by much, and zero problem at all. Like nothing, no soreness. This time I get a little calf cramping and I'm going, what the heck? Now, it was a lot hotter that day. And so that's the only variable I can think of. So, you know, more on that later. You know, the whole thing about muscle cramping is kind of inconclusive. Like it's not necessarily, they're not saying 100% that it's about electrolytes or 100% that it's about dehydration. I was neither electrolyte deficient nor hydration deficient in either way, because I know how to deal with that. So all I can say is maybe because of the heat, it was an off day. I don't know. I did go to speed up at mile like 12, and I could have. I mean, I could have sprinted the last mile. I was feeling really good, and my leg said, you're not going to do that. And so I sped ahead for like about 5 seconds, and then my leg started to cramp. And I was like, okay, fine. Jeez, fine. So I came across the finish, totally fine. But disappointing to me because I probably could have done it even better than that. So that's how that goes. I did finish with my friend Aspen, who is a good runner too. And so she and I crossed finish line together, which is cool. So there you go. Fun day. Did a personal record. I ran my last one. I looked it up in 2012, I think. And so beat that time by over a minute. All right, good. Moving on. All right, you guys. So one of the things I wanted to talk about today, just kind of get into the madness of this. Some of the stuff I talk about in this podcast is sort of the nitty gritty of small steps, but then also just sort of themes and bigger pictures of, you know, I'll be walking around during the day and I'm thinking about this a lot, obviously. It's my practice. I'm working with clients, et cetera, et cetera. And so things come up. And it's some of the things that I talk about are just ways to frame or ways to look at our lives in the modern world. I think that the value of that, and this is obviously what I do with private clients, is part of it is like it's an awareness time. It's building in, for the month that I work with people on a private basis, building in more awareness day to day into their lives. It is building, I'm getting to this a little bit later in this episode, but it really is about in almost entirely about how much awareness you can bring to your life. Because the more awareness, the more you actually pay attention, the better you can assess, the better you can then enact change. It does all start with, and that's, you know, I've talked about the first task a million times. That is the beginning of that process. That is the beginning of increased awareness. Yes, I said last week, it's also the basis of where you're going with your small steps. But part of it is the awareness of knowing the existing present day conflict between who you want to be essentially and how you're behaving day to day. Now, again, who you want to be is who you are. That's just me. That's where I stand apart from virtually everybody else. I'm not like, I want to be this. You're there already. You're already that person. It's just a matter of peeling away stuff instead of changing over time. You're just peeling away crap that's built up and to get to you. That's what you're doing. But what I do draw attention to certain things to, maybe you can look week to week between these episodes to say, oh, that's interesting. That's Sid said. Now I'm going to look at this way. And in doing that, you can sort of bring a more acute attention to things that you might not be aware of day to day or notice day to day. Some stuff is just plain out funny. It's like, it's ridiculous about just like I've talked about before. Like we actually have a discussion about, you know, do you feel like Italian or do you feel like Mexican? Like we're so out of the just nutty nut zone with regard to food. It's just insane. And I'm not even saying to change it. I have those exact conversations, but I also can kind of grin and go, this is hilarious. I mean, it is hilarious. And that way we can say, sometimes I got to get a handle on this thing. Like it's so nutty nut that I got to sometimes just rein it in just a little bit. so that I'm not over the, you know, over the hump of just being unhealthy, flat out, straight up, right? Sometimes I notice how crazy it is, and sometimes I want to indulge in that, but sometimes I want to be able to rein it in. But what does that sound like to you guys? Sounds like a choice, doesn't it? And so that's where the awareness comes in over time, is the more you engage via this podcast, I'll be straight up, it's just what it is. I believe in this. You might disagree with me, but you're listening to this, so I hope that you agree. But this is that one of the tools that I hope you're employing in your lives to say, okay, I'm engaging in my life through this podcast. And I get emails from people saying, I listened to, you know, this six podcasts, and, you know, and none of them do they drink single malt scotch. So therefore, that's not at all what they say. And I, by the way, if I haven't been clear, I do want to be known as the health coach who drinks single malt scotch all the time. I mean, that is where I was going with this. And frankly, look, I've done 102 episodes. I can be honest with you by now. I only did this so that somebody would send me a bottle of single malt scotch. I mean, that's a commitment. 102 weeks in a row to get three bottles of single malt scotch. I think that's totally worth it. Totally worth it. Like I said, I would have never bought them. Mm. Where was I? I want to draw attention right now to this. The life for all of us in the modern world, for I'm going to just step out on a limb here and say all of us, is, and here's how I know, because nobody listening to this is completely natural. Nobody listening to this is completely natural. You know how I know? Because you're freaking listening to a podcast. You can't do that if you're just hippie guy in a tree. You can't, if you're protesting a freeway right now and you're living in a tree but you're not listening to a podcast, are you? You're not listening to a podcast. So if you're listening to a podcast, then you are not 100% natural. I'm recording a podcast. I'm not 100% natural. And I remember when I put my book out, it's called Approaching the Natural, like this podcast. Hello, a health manifesto. And I remember somebody was like, you have tattoos. That's not natural. It's like, you got me. Might as well burn my book, because it's called freaking Approaching the Natural, not all the way the natural, but hey, whatever. Don't read past the title. That's that sort of mentality of like, well, if you can't be all the way, don't do it at all. And that is what the battle is with me and my clients and with you. The battle is this thinking of like, if you can't do it all the way, don't do it at all. Hence, we fail at a diet because it does set us up for failure, and we don't just dial it back a little bit and continue sort of some of the stuff. Usually, we just punt and just go, done with a cayenne pepper lemon juice water forever until I hit that tipping point where I feel so crappy again that I want to get a relief from that. So I go on to a 7-day or 20-day cleanse. It gives me a little bit of relief. And then I punt and go back to the whole thing. And then eventually the tipping point occurs again where I just look in the mirror and I go, holy crap, how'd that happen? What's going to be the fastest thing to give me relief from this thing? I'm either going to go to alcohol or I'm going to do my cayenne pepper lemon juice and get a little thing, and so on and so forth. That's called yo-yo dieting. Just because it's a cleanse run by a hippie doesn't mean it's not a diet, because it is. Good. But what I'm saying is this. The modern world for all of us is such a just a package of, in a sense, unfamiliarity. It's a package of non-adaptability for us, mentally and physically. So much of what we do is we have not adapted to physically or mentally. We just have not. We have not adapted to the barrage and repeated stress that we are under day to day. We have not, and we're having kids. You know, we're doing some natural things, right? So we're procreating. And as soon as we procreate, we're putting our kids into this situation where for them and for us, it's just immediate. The kid's first experience is just nutty nut nut. Usually it's 15 nurses wiping stuff off their bodies and manhandling them in weird ways. It's like from day one, for most human beings, it's just immediately not the peaceful situation. And not like childbirth is peaceful, but it's a little bit different in how we've evolved. And now we're, of course, C-sections are on the rise. And a family member literally had a baby, literally. And it was around December. And she told me that there was a ton of pregnancy scheduled for 12-12-12, December 12th, 2012. So we've gotten so off the charts that we are, now that we have families going, I'm going to have my baby on that day. And I'm going to schedule it so my baby can have a special birthday. Now, I hope I've not offended anybody, but that's a little nutty. Look, can you laugh about it if you did it? Yes. Just go, yeah, that was kind of nutty. Good. Good to know. But because we're scheduled, because we, you know why we have that ability to do that? Because we invented C-sections, which probably, and not probably, definitely serve a purpose sometimes, but now it's sort of recreational. And there's ramifications to that on the bacterial level. You know, I've talked about the natural and healthy bacteria that we're supposed to be in contact with. Well, one of those things starts at birth. It's like essential. It's essential that, I'm not going to get into the details of childbirth per se, but when you do it naturally, you're exposed to the very bacteria that populate your body and that you need from your mom. Hello. And then we feed formula so we don't get the, again, we don't get the microorganisms that come in natural child, you know, breast milk. So there are ramifications to how unnatural we are day to day. And it starts literally before birth because, of course, the mom is in this natural, unnatural world. The dad is in this unnatural world, everything else. So on and so forth. I ain't freaking you out. You can get on top of this stuff in a huge way. That's this approach. However, I just want to frame it by you taking a moment to say, to look and say, we've got a recent invention of a job, for instance, okay? We don't look for food. We don't go searching for food. We go searching for the job that will give us the money, then we take the money, and then we buy the food. We've removed ourselves again from this natural connection to the needs of our bodies and minds. We are further separating ourselves. And in doing so, I find that there's a ramification for that. That's not so good for our health, okay? But when you look at that and say, okay, well, I've got that sort of recent invention of a job, and it makes sense if you look at it this way, that light box food and things like alcohol and maybe mindless entertainment, which again, all fun in levels, but again, it's about balance, right? But you can see how those things are pretty great to have as a balance to the invention of a job, which for most people is kind of crazy. Like, we're not with our tribes when we're at work. We're not in nature in our work. And this is for most people. Some people have jobs where they're in nature. Great. But let's say for the balance in big cities, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So it sort of makes sense that we have also crafted these, the cure for the job, the cure being the thing that offsets that amount of nutty nut nut with a little, the other side of that, which is light box foods and alcohol and drugs and things that take us completely out of that state in the sense. And so you could, the analogy that would be in the wild, wild food is the perfect balance for a wild life. So in other words, wild food doesn't work in a way in the modern world to take care of us that much. It takes too much effort to find wild food. We have covered the natural earth with materials like concrete and buildings and everything else. But in the wild, wild food's that perfect. It's perfect. It has a perfect place in a wild life. If you're in nature, you have wild food because you're living a wild life. You're not going to the job. You have access, or you're just doing that thing that to keep you alive. You're finding food and you're eating food. The more you constrain life, the less wild you become, the more unnatural you become, the more unnatural the things that you're surrounded by become. So the more away from nature you are, then obviously the less natural the food is that you eat and the things that you do for pleasure and all these kinds of things, and how you relate to people becomes more unnatural in as the world gets constrained and moved away from what's wild at all. Now again, approaching the natural is coming back a little bit. So we've swung pretty far wide, I think we can all agree, and now we're coming back just a little bit. But what I was thinking is, I get asked a lot of this question about cooked food. I'm not a raw foodist. I've talked about food. I've talked about cooked food and raw food. First and foremost, I am 100% in the camp of to get away from this idea of raw food and get into the idea of the water content of food and the fiber content of food. I think those are bigger focuses, especially as I do more research on bacteria, healthy bacteria. The thing that feeds healthy bacteria in our guts is our fibers, okay? In food, fiber feeds that good bacteria. It's what it does. And that good bacteria can feed those fibers, which are essentially indigestible sugars. That's kind of a way to look at fiber. We don't have the enzymes to break fiber down. And so it serves that, but it's awesome that way because it serves a very good purpose in our body, one of which is to feed the bacteria, the good bacteria in our guts. So for me, it's like we can get into this whole thing about cooked food, raw food, blah, 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 or we can start talking about the water content of food. We can start talking about the fiber content of food and all these kinds of things too, in addition to the other micronutrients that I want people to only really think about these days, unless they're starving and can't find calories. Then yeah, think about protein, fat, and carbohydrate. But short of that, think about vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, antioxidants, fiber, and water. Include those things. Okay, back to cooked food. The reason why I started talking about sort of the natural life being constrained in the modern world, and then the natural, sorry to use that word, but the sort of the expected response of that is sort of unnatural food and unnatural things. Well, cooked food is one of these things that's, in a way, it's become appropriate for the modern world. We are suffering from chronic stress as a result of the modern world, and so to give us relief from that, in a sense, cooked food serves a very real purpose. Why? Because it begins the process of the breakdown of that food, and in doing so can and does release some nutrients. Now, be clear, it also destroys nutrients too, like vitamin C, like folic acid, that are resistant or not, sorry, not resistant, but they're affected by heat. They're degraded by heat. So there's a, to me as a nutritionist, I'm advocating for a sort of a balance between those things. But the point I wanted to make was that cooked food sort of makes sense in the modern world. I don't necessarily think that eating 100% raw is going to be doable for many people in the modern world or even beneficial because of the effort it takes to eat that way healthily, at least. So in other words, you can eat fruits and vegetables all day, you would be amazingly healthy, but you'd have to eat a volume of food that most people, because of these unnatural things like jobs and the way that we have families in the modern world, which is unnatural. We take our kids to school, we have carpool and soccer and all these kinds of things. We simply don't, most of us have the time. And if we carved out enough time to consume enough fruits and vegetables to give us enough calories from those very low calorie but high nutrient density foods, if we carved out enough time to achieve that, it would be at the expense of a whole bunch of other stuff like our family life and like our jobs. Understand that family life is now not what we do every day. It's like exercise. We have family time. We have to carve out family time. We have to carve out time to exercise. We even carve out time to eat healthy or time to lose weight. Okay, I'm going to now lose weight. I'm going to go into this time of my life where I will now lose weight for the next 3 months, and then I will go on to something else and do something else. So cooked food, which is not really about this whole thing I'm talking about, but that's just one of the indicators, one of the sort of things to look at, is appropriate in a way. It does break down food. We have chronic digestion problems as a result of chronic stress, as a result of this bacterial imbalance that we're just all being affected by, meaning the healthy bacteria that we should be around all the time being dirty. Well, now we're not. We're too clean. I've said it before. So the bacterial imbalance occurs and we're susceptible to all the things we're thinking about and hearing about these days: irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue, Crohn's disease, even diabetes, even cancer. All these things are affected on some level by the bacterial health of our gut, because those bacteria affect our immune system. Those bacteria affect the nutrient absorption, how well we actually get food out of the food that we're eating. So in that sense, I'm never a one trick guy for every client to say 100% cooked food or 100% raw. It's just not appropriate for some people. And I have recommended things like digestive enzymes in the short term, because most clients that work with me have some sort of digestive stuff going on, because it's just modern world living, guys, modern world living. Okay. So sometimes it's just appropriate. I just wanted to point that out. I'm not all way in cooked food or all way in raw food. I do think that adding in on some level, water-filled raw vegetables are great. But understand this, approaching the natural applies to food too. And so nuts and seeds that we eat in the modern world are dried. They're dried because we don't pick them off a plant anymore. We don't pick them off a tree. We don't pick a cashew off. And by the way, if you've ever Google picture of a cashew still on the tree, it hangs under a cashew apple. It's the trippiest looking thing. And people eat cashew apples, but I guess they don't travel well. So you won't find them unless you live near an actual cashew tree. But the cashew hangs underneath the fruit. It's the coolest thing. Google that. But if we were in nature, we would pick that nut and we'd eat it. And guess what it would have in it? Water. And so now approaching the natural is like, well, that's less natural than a nut or something that has the water still in it. It's sort of creeping your way to what's most natural in every regard. Okay? So just so you know. So a lot of quote unquote raw foodists are just slamming down nuts and seeds, olive oil, just all that stuff. And I don't find that healthy at all. I do find it healthier than McDonald's, but again, it's in its thing. So it's a lot healthier than McDonald's. I don't want to be, you know, no mistake there. But as you creep in, now, could you be healthier eating some cooked food than a quote unquote raw foodist? Sure, for damn sure, right? So it's looking at, that's why I sort of focus on the fiber water aspect of things. But again, in the approaching the natural way of thinking, in the way that you cook your food, you can also apply that way of thinking, meaning there's a light steaming and there's a boiling in hot oil. So there's a whole spectrum there of like, how much are you cooking your food? Are you overcooking your food? Are you cooking the crap out of your food? Okay. Or are you braising in some vegetable stock, or are you, you know, lightly steaming, or are you putting in a pressure cooker and it's like looking bright green, vibrant and awesome, or is it looking wilted and just beat to hell? Okay. So again, don't sweat it. It's about most of the time. But these are things to be aware of. But to say all straight up, there's no room for cooked food in the modern world, I think is ridiculous. I think that cooking food, obviously, especially if you're eating meat, kind of safety issue, isn't it? Pasteurization. These are modern world necessities. Ideally, we're not doing them. Ideally, I'm not taking vitamin D. But again, I'm not in the sun a lot of times because I do what? Work in a job that's not in the sun. Okay. So these are modern world compromises. The best thing to do is not get nutty nut about them, not get stressed about them, but just say, okay, well, where can I make moves? Where can I make moves to kind of, when I can, do what I can? That's the small steppers way. That's the way that saves you from going over the sort of the tipping point of getting a little hyper attentive about things that you don't have control over, at least not in the moment. Focus on the things that you do. Focus on the things that you do have control over, like having a glass of water in the morning, like putting some stalk of celery or some cucumber on your plate at night, more lightly steaming the vegetables that you were steaming a lot and backing that off a little bit, leaving them a little bit crunchy. These are the things. I'm not joking. They make difference. They make the heat that you prepare your food makes a difference. Lower the heat, better the food, less damage. Okay. These things called advanced glycation end products, these things that occur in cooking that are damaging in the body. Well, they occur at a certain temperature, I think it's 350 and above. So these are things to just be aware of. But again, you don't have to go super hyper attentive on it. I want to free up your ability to live your lives so that you don't have to think about food as much. So what I want to give you in this podcast often is just a little hints of information, but you don't have to use this day to day. Try to include some watery fruits and vegetables more and more over time. That's pretty much going to be it, okay? If you're eating stuff that is light box because it's been processed and changed from what's natural, see if you can step back into getting that food a little bit more natural. White flour, whole wheat flour. Boom. Huge step. Got it? Okay, guys? A little bit more. Look at it. A little more natural? Good. A little more closer to where it came from? Okay, great. That goes for animals and plants. Got it? Okay. I wanted to talk about real quick my journaling step. I've talked about it ad nauseum, so don't throw up. But of recent times, it has degraded a little bit. And meaning, this is what it means. I have not been journaling as much. Now, am I still journaling every week? Yes. Is it still my most of the time? It is. But it's less my most of the time than before. Meaning, I'd miss a day every few weeks, maybe. But now I had found myself missing a couple days per week on average. I wasn't sweating it. Some days I wouldn't write in it because I'd be doing other writing and I'd be like, okay, well, I did the other writing. Here's what I did, and I want to share this with you because this happens. Now, I've been journaling now for a long time. If you've been a long time listener, it's been, I would say, a year. I don't know which episode it was where I was talking about that, but it's been a long time since I enacted it. It is a thing now. It's off my steps list. It doesn't need to be there. It's just something I do every day. However, I did notice because I pay attention to my life, wink, wink, that I wasn't journaling as much. The first thought I had, and the first thing that I would want you to think about too, is I devoted a quick thought to whether this step was serving a purpose any longer. Okay? Now remember, I've told you before, when you put in your first step, you say, could I do this for the rest of my life? That's your question. Could I do this step for the rest of my life? Now, what I always say is, you may not do it for the rest of your life, but could you? So when I began my journaling step, I finally settled on a step, and there's no failure because I settled on it. Perfect. Could I do this for the rest of my life? Yes. Okay, I got that dialed in. Eventually, I built up, and it's become a habit. It's what I do, and it's fine. But life changes, right? This is the beauty of my approach, why it works, and why my clients have success, because they stay engaged, and because life changes, they know how to negotiate that. Diets don't tell you that, do they? They don't know how to negotiate change. If you adopt this wholeheartedly, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you don't, you will. It's not like everybody succeeds at my approach because sometimes they're drawn to that diet or drawn to the thing because they're frustrated it's not happening fast enough. Fine. But when you dig in on this, you can make it as fast or slow as you want. That's the beauty. Okay. Back to the deal. First thought was, does this thing serve a purpose for me or not? Okay. The answer I had was it does. Now, like I said, I didn't have to do it the rest of my life. And I still may not do the rest of my life. So I gave myself the opening to say, maybe this is a step I don't want to have anymore. Weird, right? I'm always talking about adding things and manipulating and assessing and changing and decreasing and increasing sometimes too. But understand that it may not be you. A step may not be appropriate for you anymore. Something you built in over time. I could turn out in 6 months to just hate music all of a sudden. I'll stop my guitar step, which I did, by the way, before hitting the record button on this podcast tonight. Still loving that thing every week. Have not missed a week. Love it. Love it. And I got to tell you, I come in to do the podcast and still, even though I've been doing this for a few months now, I still kind of get to the podcast and I turn over. Thank goodness my guitar is there because it's there and it reminds me. Got it? Okay. More on that in a second. First thing that I realized was, in answer to that first question, is does this serve a purpose? Is it does. I still believe for myself that journaling has been an extremely useful tool for me. It keeps me centered. It keeps me grounded. It keeps me engaged. It's not the only thing that does, but it's one of the thing that does. One of the thing that does. Grammar lessons, also amazing. They keep me engaged. With regards to, boom. There's a guy out there who corrected me on that a while ago. He said, he's a buddy of mine. He goes, it's not in regards, it's in regard. I'm having grammar issues, but he congratulated me because I've been using with regard to, not with regards to. I think that's a success. And that's what he's gotten out of this podcast, frankly. And I feel like I've succeeded. So there you go. Back to this. Once I decided that journaling was still what I wanted to do, still serving a purpose, then I quickly said, okay, am I happy with the amount that I'm doing it? Or is this something I've kind of slipped off of? And I realized I'd rather be doing it a little more often than I was. I was missing days and I do get the journal. Okay, good. I'm in charge. Nobody's telling me that I got to journal 7 days a week. Nobody's telling me it's a good thing for me 100% that I have to do it. I'm making these decisions myself. I used my own guidance and I do that with my clients, suggestions and guidance kinds of things, but the decision is theirs. And they come back and say, yeah, yeah, no, and we work that out. Okay, that's how that works. Good. Once I decided it was of service to me, and two, that I wanted to do it back to where I was before, then I had the question, okay, why am I not? Not, I really should be able to do this. My journal's right by my bed. The pen's right by my bed, but I don't know why I'm not doing it. I should be able to. It was, okay, what's stopping me here? What's the situation that I need to work around for? What I found out, and all of this took a matter of minutes, by the way. What I found out was, here's what was stopping me. And this is going to sound so, it's now that I'm actually talking about it out loud, it sounds kind of trivial and funny in a way. And so I just want to share this with you because this is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. I'm not kidding you. This is the kind of stuff that stops people. I'm not joking. I had a journal by my desk, by my bed, excuse me, and I had a pen by my bed. Who wouldn't think it was the easiest thing? Why wasn't I doing it? Because I'd get in bed and it'd be at night and my wife, sometimes she's reading, but the lights are out. I'd have my phone with me. I don't have a book light. I don't have a light over my bed. I don't have a book light. So I would hold my phone with one hand and then kind of turn over my stomach and I'd have my journal and I'd be writing with my other hand and I'd have the phone. And it was kind of a pain in the ass and I didn't really put it into conscious thought. I just, when I would think, I get in bed and I think, okay, I can journal and I'd just be like, ah, and I'd be looking for an excuse not to do it. And it was because of just, it was uncomfortable and kind of a pain to hold my phone. It was just like this thing. It was like, and it just became enough. That little thing became enough to dissuade me more and more over time, over the last month of journaling. How funny is that? How most people out looking outside going in and go, oh, seriously? It was really hard for you to hold your phone? No. But it was enough of a deterrent to make it, yeah, not worth it. Weird, right? So I solved the problem. I've never looked into this thing before, but the situation presented itself. I wanted to work around. So I went to Amazon and I did a search on pen lights, which wasn't the best search ever because they were literally like pen-shaped lights. But what I wanted was a pen that lit up and I found a freaking pen that lit up. It was like $11. And it's a pilot, like an airline pilot pen. So when you're dark in the cockpit and you click this pen, a light shines out the end with a thing. I've been journaling every night since then. I'm not joking. It was the one thing. Now I can't stop myself because there's no problem. There's no hindrance. I can lay on my back. I click this freaking pen. It doesn't wake anybody up. By anybody, I mean my wife. I don't have like a crew of people in bed with me. I wasn't alive during the 70s or at least not of that age. And so click that pen. And I'm writing on a journal. It's the solution. Solve problem solved. Got it? This is called engagement. This is called living your life the best way you can. This is called not relying on anybody else to solve problems for you. This is called learning the strength you have. This was a big win for me. I'm not there in every regard, but I'm there. But I solved that problem, and I want to be the kind of person. Or I'll put it this way: I am the kind of person. Not that I act this way all the time, but I'm the kind of person that solves these problems as they occur because they're going to occur again. So when we had our twins and we were exhausted and the idea of going out the door to run was miserable, was it easy outside looking in? Sure. Put on your shoes and walk out the door. But it was in my brain. So we had a mini tramp. I talk about in the book. Had a mini trampoline. Where? In the living room where it still is. Why? Because it's so easy, so there. That's why I have my guitar on the stand plugged into my amplifier and my amplifier plugged into the wall because playing guitar is literally a switch away. When I had it in my case, in my house, too much. Fine. I can bitch about it and I can be upset about that and I can feel bad about it and I can think, why can't I do that? Or I can think, how can I do that? How can I make that happen for myself? Okay, how crazily easy do I really have to make this? Fine, I'll make it that crazily easy to get back into the swing of things, especially with journaling. And it's been great ever since. And I just got the pen last week. But it's like I walk in and go, I can't not do it now. Cool. Make that change. I made the change. I feel better. I feel more positive because I'm journaling. Boom, boom, boom. You can see the domino effect of that. The healthy food analogy is what I've talked about before a million times in this podcast, which is just getting the light box food out of your house, not taking it out of your life, but taking it out of your house most of the time, replacing it with healthy food most of the time so that you're not in this situation. So it's so easy for you to do that because it's there. I can get into the nitty gritty with, and I would do with clients, maybe making things in bulk 1 week, beginning of the week. So you just have to, you open the fridge, boom, can't not, just got got quinoa in there. Might as well take it out. It's already cooked. Making these things absurdly easy, putting a smile on your face and realizing, I wish I didn't have, on one sense, I wish I didn't have to make it this easy for myself to do this. But on the other hand, kind of what it takes in the modern world. Why? Because we're surrounded by so much stuff that distracts us from these kinds of things. We do have to make it. Remember what I talked about earlier in this episode. The modern world is such a constrained kind of thing that we have to balance that out with the relief of the light box foods. But in a sense, we also have to balance that out by going overboard on how easy we make things for us when we want to make changes. We have to make things so easy. We have to just serve it up so it's just right there. If we make it at all hard, the modern world's there to say, don't bother yourself. Flick on this TV, put in this TV dinner. We got you covered. You've got to make it just as easy for yourself to do the healthy thing. I'm telling you, I know what I'm talking about. Boom. Okay? Okay. Subject to this podcast. You might be wondering, and if you are wondering, then don't worry about it. Okay? Ask for a nun's number. Okay? That's a stupid old joke, but it's going to get me into the subject. Now, here's the joke. You can ask a nun for her number, but don't get into the habit. Do you get it? Okay. If you don't get it, then just let's just focus on the word habit. That's what I was going with. Kind of a letdown that you guys didn't think that was funny, but that's okay. That happens a lot with me. I'm still here for you. I want to talk about habit. Here's the thing. I've talked about it before, but I'm going to shed light on it this way today. The basic framework for a habit is sort of a three-pronged reality. You got your motivation or your craving. You got your thing that you do about it. And you got the reward for doing it. That's kind of what we're built in. And those are infused in us at a very early age, like I've talked about. So the kid wants the toy. The parent says, in order to get the toy, you got to do this thing around the house. The kid does it and they get the toy. Boom, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Okay? You got your trigger thing. You got the thing that you do about it. And you got your reward. So now we've cut to the modern world. Okay. Now we've got crappy day at work. There's your trigger. Got a crappy day at work. I'm feeling crappy. What do I want? I want to not feel crappy anymore. So I know because I learned by eating Twinkies that will give me the relief that I'm desiring. The problem, and it's not a problem, but it's just the situation or it's just the reality. I'll put it that way. Okay. The reality of this is that we often make it about and I'll just talk about food for a second. We make it about the habit, in this case, the food. So I get plenty of people all the time, even just people that I teach at the Stanford Inn, where they it's a one class, okay? And they go, I'm an emotional eater. I'm coming to you about nutrition because I'm an emotional eater. Well, what do you think the first thing out of my mouth is? Your emotional eating has almost nothing to do with food. If you're an emotional eater, it's because you're an emotional state. You're in an emotional state. You want relief from that emotional state. Food right now is the thing that does that for you. But what you really want, and this is getting to the, sort of the crux of what I'm getting at here by talking about habit, is you want the reward that right now that food is serving you. Fine. It could be alcohol, drugs, like I've said. It's all that kind of thing. You want the reward that you want, which is the relief from the emotional state that is not making you feel good. Now, where does that emotional state come from? It comes from a relationship. It comes from an angry thing, interaction you have with a coworker. It comes with a commute that you can't stand doing because you aren't with your family because you're driving 2 hours a day. It's a whole host of modern world issues, isn't it? I mean, this is the stress I'm talking about. So you've got this behavior, this habit. Here's what I do. When I feel this way, I do this thing and I get that reward. Okay? Tomorrow, when I feel this way again for maybe a whole nother reason, maybe it's not a coworker this time, maybe it's a whatever, something else happened. Your mom and you got in a fight. Fine. It puts me in the emotional state. When I'm in an emotional state, I have this thing to do because I know that this thing is going to deliver me this feeling, which is getting me out of this emotional state. Fine. Good to know. Remember I said it's about the knowledge and awareness? Okay. Changing the behavior And all I'm saying is it's via my small steps approach that I think is effective. But changing the behavior is essentially switching out just the middle thing. Just the middle thing. Oftentimes, we think about the middle thing only, like the food is the middle thing. But really what we're talking about is, and the power that you can have to change this is to be more hyper aware of what gets you to the point where you're feeling like overeating and how you feel afterwards, the reward or how you want to feel afterwards. Those are the things I want you to focus on. Don't focus on the food. Don't make it about the food, because the food is just the thing. It just happens to be the thing that right now is filling in that space for you. But you feel a certain way, you don't want to feel it anymore, and you want to find an activity that is going to give you relief from that. Just be aware of that so far. Just be aware of the things that you sort of identify as unhealthy in your life. Identify where I'm at when I do that thing. What is it in my life that gets me to that thing? Is it consistently your job? Okay, then maybe there's other ways in other parts of your life where you can, like I said, bring in more balance so the job doesn't affect you, so that it doesn't get you to that point where you're sitting down to emotionally eat. This is the real work of living, you guys. You can fake it for a while by doing other stuff, but the real work is more awareness and more attention, okay? We are more aware of the events prior to the act, and also become more aware of the relief we feel after the act. Don't just emotionally eat, and it's easier said than done. But when you emotionally eat, think about how you feel afterwards. Now, in the moment, probably not. Maybe you're not in the greatest state of awareness, but maybe through tools like journaling, you can go, okay, when I came home today, I was super emotional and really unhappy. Okay, why was that? Just no judgment. Why was that? Okay, well, the facts. I was at work, and then I worked really long, and they didn't communicate to me that they needed me to stay late this day, so then I had to, and I missed a party as a result of that. So I came home really mad, and I opened the refrigerator, and I grabbed out, doesn't really matter, because I grabbed out this food, and afterwards, when I was eating the food, I just stopped thinking about work. Cool. Now you have this thing. You go, okay, the trigger was this. I did the act. And later you were able to assess it and say, I did get relief. I did get relief. I didn't feel super stressed about work anymore. Now, you also might add in that over time, you're also eventually, even the relief passes from work, from the work stress. But then because of the habit that you're currently doing, you add more stress, don't you? Right? You add that kind of like, I wish I hadn't eaten that thing. Good to know also. Don't change it, just good to know. So now you've kind of given yourself what I've called before a million times, short-term stress relief, okay? But what if you decide you want to live a little healthier and happier in the modern world? It is simply this. How do you figure on a new habit that will both be a reaction to the trigger and will give you similar relief, but then will give you longer relief, longer-term relief, longer-term happiness, okay? Where the small steps comes in is because it's a very gradual process to do this. It takes time to do this, because in the immediate, tomorrow having a salad and replace that fried chicken and mashed potatoes isn't going to give you the same relief right away. It's not going to give you the same level of relief on a whole host of biochemical, reasons that it doesn't get you as high, because not flavored the way that fried chicken is, not fried in this oil. It doesn't trip your little pleasure centers in your body, in your brain. Okay. So that's where the small steps comes in. So again, the awareness of what leads you to the habit, the awareness of how you feel after the habit, when you start to transition, keep awareness in the mix as much as you can, so that as you bring in more healthy food, let's say, and I'm sticking in the health realm, sorry, or the food realm is what it is. You can say, well, I didn't get the same level of immediate, but then I felt good 2 hours later. I felt good the next day. These are when I'm realizing that I'm feeling good on the balance way more and in a higher quantity overall than I am by doing the more unhealthy behavior. Good to know, right? Again, the other question is, the more we're aware of the trigger, the state of our minds when we get to that unhealthy behavior or unhealthy habit, then we can figure in ways to minimize the time where we succumb to the unhealthy habit that, by the way, is still stress relieving. Getting drunk is stress relieving. It's a fact. It's not like people, you know, I just want to acknowledge that. It's like, I never want to take away food or say like cheese is horrible for health-wise, but it does relieve stress. It does relieve stress. I've said it before, the person that goes to the Big Mac when they're emotional or overeating, or the person that goes for a salad when they're unhappy because they want to make themselves feel good, they're all coming from the same place. You want to make yourselves feel good. All I'm saying is take the weight off the food for now. Focus on what gets you to that point and how you feel afterwards. That's where your shifts are going to occur, and that's going to allow you to slip in over time a new middle section there that allows you to have the same trigger in a sense and the same relief in a sense, but with a healthier habit in between that allows you over time to feel better in your life long term. Got it? Okay. This is why I've said 1,000 times, emotional eating isn't about food, ever. It's not about the food. We want to make it about the food. We want to go see a nutritionist to tell us what we already know, which is that eating potato chips isn't healthy. We all know that. Why do we go to potato chips then? Because it's not about health. It's not about nutrition. It's not about that. It's about we're surrounded by light box foods, the very foods that offset how crazy the modern world is. They do a better job offsetting that craziness than a cucumber does in the short term. That's a fact. You know what else does even better than potato chips? Cocaine. This is even better. It's all degrees. But over time, and we can create most of the time, we can say, okay, can we be aware of this whole equation where you've got the trigger, the habit, and the relief? Can we be aware of that whole thing and start to make shifts in that way? Yes, we can. We can absolutely do that. Can we figure out over time? Yes. And can we identify other reliefs and other bonuses, rewards? Not just relief, but think about it as a reward. So for a second, I'm going to discuss my fruit days that I do now and then. Now, I haven't done it in a couple weeks, but I'm doing one today as I record this podcast. That's another reason why I'm not doing scotch, because a fruit-only day does not mix well with scotch. Okay? There's no studies on that. It's anecdotal. However, in my own experiment with my fruit-only day, and I really want you to focus for a second, don't make this about the fact that I'm doing fruit-only. Okay, one time years ago, I was talking to a person, and I said, you know, a friend of mine is a sommelier, and that's true. And I said, you know, he always says you should taste food the same way that you taste wine. Like that he said food actually has these subtle nuances. Like if you take a bite of a cucumber, and this is actually true. This is absolutely true. I've had this experience where when I have fasted, I did a water fast once. All this occurred, by the way, before I was a nutritionist. I've never recommended a cleanse since. But I did a water fast because I was researching this. And before I went back to school, I was into this stuff, as I've said. So I did a water fast. One of the best foods I ever had was an apple that I had after 2 days of water fasting. I couldn't make it 3. It was freaking miserable. But I ate an apple and my taste buds already in 2 days had recalibrated sort of back down, mellowed out. And I had this apple and it was like a beautiful glass of wine. It was complex. It was it was so sweet. But we've calibrated up to intense sweetness all the time, intense salt, inordinate, disproportionate amounts of these sweetness and saltiness. And so when we eat something that's not flavored like that, it tastes bland to us. When in a sense, it's highly flavorful, it's just that our tongues can't taste the subtlety anymore. So my friend who's a sommelier, he said, try eating food just for fun, where you like take a bite of cucumber and really focus on the taste, like really no dressing, like, you know, just that's what we do to cucumber, right? We dress it with something that's highly sweet or highly salted. So we eat that cucumber. So I was telling a friend of mine that. So I go, yeah, like you try to eat food the way that you drink wine. Like we drink wine and we try to get the different flavors and the different subtleties. And her response was, I don't really like red wine. So I was like, okay, sip. Super frustrating. I was like, it's not about the freaking red wine. It's not about the red. I was trying to make a point about their cucumber. Damn it. Okay, so now the analogy, the reason why I brought that up. I'm talking about my fruit-only day. Don't make it about my fruit-only day. Don't make it like, I don't want to do fruit all day because it's not about that. It's not about that. It's about something that is working for me in my life, and that's why it's got to be individualized for you. Okay, so back to this. My fruit step, I had to identify what I want to feel and sort of the trigger of this. So here's what's going on with me. Usually on weekends, I let loose a little bit. this weekend I ran the half marathon, and that was definitely an energy expenditure. I found myself super hungry. I didn't eat the best food. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't the best. Had a couple beers. You know the process. I don't go crazy ever. I've kind of mellowed out I've kind of minimized the swings, I'll put it that way. But, you know, relative to what my most of the time is, kind of nutty. So this morning I got up and I felt heavy, okay? Felt heavy. Now there's my trigger. Boom. What do I want to feel? Light, okay? My fruit day is getting there in this sense. I'm noticing that what I crave is to feel light. I crave feeling highly energetic. I don't like the feeling of feeling like I don't have energy and that I'm sluggish and that I have, you know, mucus, or that I wake up feeling like I got drunk, which I when I didn't. So the fruit has become, I kind of pushed it a little bit the first couple times to see, could I do this kind of thing? But now I'm watching this transition and I'm saying, it's easy for me to do a fruit only day. Like today is the easiest day yet. There's been virtually nothing. Now I felt the craving when I got home of like, I kind of wish I would have a salad tonight. Could I? Again, had to remind myself, I totally could. I'm choosing this. Nobody's making me do this. But I'm in my own process and it is getting easier. And so what I'm craving is this feeling that I'm going to feel tomorrow, pretty darn sure about it, as sure as anybody heating up a TV dinner when they're upset, they're betting on this response and this reward. And I've done this long enough now where I'm betting on that same reward. I'm betting that if I do this thing that I'm doing, I'm going to get that thing. I'm weighing it against, so then people go, well, why wouldn't you do that every day? Because then I'm not getting the reward because I also enjoy food too. So I've got to sort of put that in my life too. Now, again, fruit doesn't taste bad, but when I say I enjoy food, I like the other things that I eat too. But that's now. Maybe in 5 years from now when the kids are doing their own thing, maybe I'll do more fruit only days. I don't know. It's all about where it fits for me and what makes me freaking happy. Okay? It's getting easier for me is my point. I identified the craving, which is that I want to feel light. I want to feel thin and fit generally. This is a thing that helps me to that end. And the reward is that tomorrow morning I'm going to feel really good and I'm going to go on a run and it's going to be my best run of the week because I'm going to feel all light and energetic. That's a good thing. But I'm aware of both of those things. If I made it about weight loss, it would never be the reward. Why? Because one day isn't going to make you lose weight. So we put our eggs in this sort of I'm going to do this to lose weight thing. No wonder we don't last. It takes months to lose weight. I mean, you know, you can lose weight right away, but to lose a substantial amount of weight, months, years. If you make it about how you want to feel, how you want to live, the reward, by the way, there's a reward for me in the fruit only day that I can pull that off. I like knowing that I'm not, that I have control enough over my life where I don't have to have high kinds of food at every moment of every day. I like that I'm not beholden to food in that way. I like that I have some semblance of control sometimes over what I put in my mouth. That's for me. I like knowing that. Again, identify the craving, identify the habit, identify the reward. I want to feel strong. I want to feel like I'm not addictive all the time because I am, and every human being in the modern world is addicted to food. Trust me. Because we're not just going out and eating plain lettuce, are we? We're eating flavored stuff. So knowing that about myself and knowing that I want to know that sometimes I can get on top of that, this allows me to do that. It's a small price to pay for a huge reward. So therefore, it's becoming easier for me over time. And it is. I'm creating a new habit, but in a sense, I've got the same craving and the same reward, but the middle thing has changed. And that's pretty cool. That's working for me. Okay. Don't make it about the fruit, you guys, but find out if there's things that you're doing right now which habits aren't serving you well. And then quickly say, okay, eating the Twinkies isn't serving me because I don't feel good about my body. I'm overweight and everything. Okay, good. Now toss that aside. Now say, why am I going to the Twinkies in the first place? And what are the Twinkies delivering me? Those are the things to focus on and then begin the process and the work of saying, is there something I can put in place of the Twinkies that will get me those same things, that will do the same thing for me, that will have the same process, maybe a light walk, maybe calling a friend. Maybe that's the reward that you have from your bad day that gives you that same break, that gives you that same relief, but as you, I'm sure you can see, in a completely different way. Dig? Okay. You can ask for a nun, you can ask for a nun's phone number, but don't get into the habit. Anybody who did not get that joke, stick with me for the next 100 episodes, because you're going to start, you'll get there. You'll get there. I'm worried about my that girl in Sweden. I have a feeling that may have been lost in translation. That's okay. Next week I'll translate into Swedish. Okay. You guys are awesome. Email me podcast@sidgarzahillman.com if you have any questions or comments or guest ideas. I got an email about a guest idea. I'm going to look into that. Thank you for doing that. All right, you guys, you're doing great. In the meantime, between now and next week, do something cool. Do something fun. Enact a step. Write it down. Write down your step. I'm going to do one squat per day. Write that down. Write that down and then put that in your pocket. All right. Until next week, you guys, be well.
Of a quiet reckoning. Was there before me, silent and sad, but for a simple dignity. Left her home.